You're listening to Called to Homeschool, episode number 181, Teaching Economics and Freedom. Are you feeling the call to homeschool and you're not sure what to do? Or maybe you are already homeschooling and it doesn't look like what you hoped it would. My name is Megan Thomas and I'm a certified life coach, a mother of seven, and a homeschool pro with more than a decade of experience. I can show anyone how to create success in their homeschool, and I'd love to show you how. Are you ready? Friends, how are you? I am so excited about this episode. I got the opportunity to interview Daniel Harmon, and I'm about to hit play on that. It's a little bit of a longer one, so hopefully that's okay. But I just love being able to find easy ways to teach about economics and freedom. And I love that I found something that is super easy and doesn't make my life any harder, and I can also do it for free. So Daniel Harmon, he's going to tell you all about himself and where he came from and how he got involved in helping create the Tuttle Twins. But you want to know the funnest thing? Well, it's not the funnest, but it was super fun. He was homeschooled. And we'll talk about that a little bit too. And now he's still homeschooled, like his wife is homeschooling their children. And so it's come full circle. So it's really fun to have that perspective of knowing his upbringing and what he's doing now with his own family and having maybe that little bit of inspiration piece. Maybe that filters in a little bit with the Tuttle Twins, that family element and that really big push for freedom. So without further ado, here is the recording with Daniel Harmon. All right. I am so excited to do this interview today with Daniel Harmon. Daniel, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
I am the creator and showrunner for a TV show called Tuttle Twins, which is a cartoon that teaches kids about freedom and economics, and it's based on the best-selling book series by Connor Boyack and Elijah Stanfield. And so, yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, that's fun. But tell us a little bit, like, what else do you do in your free time?
Oh, in my free time.
Do you have free time?
I do a lot of this in my free time.
Yeah.
No, when I'm not with my kids and my wife and stuff, I like to read. I like sports and I don't have enough time to watch football and basketball. So mm-hmm. I watch highlights.
All right, that works.
Because YouTube provides that. And so I can get much more condensed versions for, you know, a few of the games that I like or whatever. But I also like to cook when I can on weekends and what else? And I like to be outdoors. So I like to go on walks and hikes and things like that. That's fun.
That's awesome. So this is fun about Daniel. Like we will be talking about Tuttle Twins, but what is a fun added bonus is his family also homeschools.
Yes.
Right. So how many kids are you guys currently homeschooling?
So
them?
It's six.
Does it look like
this? Yeah. So we don't homeschool all of them. So we have seven kids. One's in heaven. We've got six with us. There's two. It's one that's in public school right now. Okay. One of my older ones. And then the younger ones all homeschool. So I have four daughters at home. That are homeschooling, and that the credit goes to my wife on that one. Not as much me. I only help out little bits here and there with that. But yeah, we've made the decision to homeschool because I think from different sort of perspectives. For me, I was pretty motivated by having more of a hand in the education of our kids and in hopefully not stifling their creativity, which can happen when kids go to public school. And then I think for my wife, it was a lot more, probably a little bit more motivation about not having as many of influences of the world and stuff in their lives. And I think, you know, hopefully we've balanced ourselves out a little bit, which with those two kind of different perspectives on it. But I was homeschooled as a kid. I actually had kind of a mixed education where I did some homeschool, I did a little bit of public school, and I ended up graduating in high school from a little private Christian school as well that my uncle ran. And his curriculum was largely based on history and on teaching us the lessons of history, of how to learn from the lessons that, that humans kind of repeat over time and civilizations repeat. And so between a freedom-loving family in Burley, Idaho, in the middle of nowhere, you know, kind of the place where you can shoot a gun off of your back porch or or you can go out into the backyard and relieve yourself and no one cares, which was very important because we grew up in a family of nine kids and there was only two bathrooms and one often that was functional.
Right.
And so that aspect of things of going outside to be able to do your business was actually somewhat important. But when you grow up in that environment of freedom, kind of a, for me and my brothers, a lot of our homeschooling was unschooling. So it was exploring, kind of a Tom Sawyer kind of farm life type kind of thing, which was really fun and good for us. Then there are sort of unintended consequences. There's pros and cons. There's good and bad that comes with that. And I think a lot of it was we just learned to problem solve and do things in our free time that we were passionate about and excited about. And that's applied a lot to kind of our careers overall. But but that foundation of freedom with my family and then with my uncle and the way that he ran his school was, I think, a lot of what motivated my decision to approach this project and, you know, make a TV show with a cartoon about freedom and economics for kids.
I'm curious if, like, before you got married or when you got married, were you like, I hope my wife will homeschool? Because I know for me, I have mostly sons and I'm like, let's put this out there, friends. I will help your wife. I will make this happen. Like, I'll do grandma day, whatever you want. But I know, like, my girls are like, yes, we're in, but I have five sons. Right. So I'm curious if you had to have that type of conversation or if your wife was like, that's a little wacky for me.
So yes to all that. We had to have the conversations. Yes, my wife was like, that's a little wacky for me. And I was very much of, I think what was important to me was to find someone like my wife who was open-minded. And she was. Right. I could have conversations with her. I could share why I thought it was important to me. And I could also be respectful of the fact that, like, I'm not going to be the one primarily providing the schooling. Right. So I'm not going to be making that choice unilaterally at all. If anything, like, it's going to be up to you. And I've never pressured her or anything like that. It was kind of along the way. I think once we'd had two or three kids at some point, she was just like, you know what? I think I want to homeschool them. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, cool. She's like, yeah. She's like, I just don't like the idea of sending them off to school. I don't know if that's going to be the best thing for them. I think I want to keep them home here and do some stuff. And I mean, to her credit, she's taught all our kids to read and she's, you know, sat down with them and done their lessons and all those kinds of things. And I think being a homeschooling parent can be really hard because sometimes you can be really hard on yourself about how you're doing.
Absolutely.
And I think my wife and I have both experienced those feelings. And I think it's more, as time goes by, I think the more I'm learning about it is more teaching your kids a love of learning and being there for them and just trying your best and figuring things out. And it has less to do with like, oh, I'm an expert on this subject, so therefore we can have schooling on that. And it's more about, like I said, some of those ways that kids fill their time when you're not like right there in their face all the time. That's maybe some of their most important moments of what they're developing for the future. It's different development than what they would get at school, but I think it's important development.
That's amazing. So how many years have you guys homeschooled?
It will now have been, probably 15 or 16 years. I mean, if you count from the time they were born, but.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
that's right.
But it, I guess so more realistically, it's probably something like a dozen years or something like that.
Yeah. That's funny. I've never counted before quote unquote school age. So I was like, this many years, but if I count that, I've been homeschooling for 21 years. So I like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I was surely teaching him things when he was a baby. So that's fun. So I don't know if you guys know much about Daniel. You've maybe heard the name Harmon Brothers, and it's something that I have heard a lot of And so I was really excited when I saw that he was a part of the Tuttle Twins, because I have loved the Tuttle Twins series. I remember I bought the very first book, The Law, I don't even know how many years ago, in a co-op. They're like, there's this book, it's pretty good, right? And so I'm as excited that two things that I enjoy have joined together. So let's talk a little bit about Harmon Brothers and how that helped you navigate into creating a TV show. What is the Harmon Brothers? What do you do?
So Harmon Brothers is an ad agency. Mm-hmm. We're most known for viral videos on YouTube, Facebook, and the like. The brands that we're most known for having done are Squatty Potty, the pooping unicorn ad, for anyone that hasn't seen that. Poopery and the girl on the, like, in the stall and the toilet and stuff. And, you know, some of these brands were nothing. And then we shouldn't say nothing, but we're relatively unknown, had some success. And then when we got involved in that partnership, really became something much more, where they exploded and became household names. But Poopery, Squatty Potty, there was Purple. We launched mm-hmm. the Purple brand with the egg drop test with Mallory Everton from Studio C, and chatbooks.
Yes, I remember the chatbooks ads were hilarious, right?
Yeah,
she's in the tub. Really silly stuff like that.
Yeah, relatable stuff for moms, right? Super relatable. Definitely. And
I still subscribe to chatbooks. I love them.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And we had Fiber Fix and Lumi and Kodiak Cakes and all these different ones that we did ClickFunnels, some people might recognize. But anyway, we stumbled into this ad agency, I guess is the best way to put it, because my brothers had co-founded a company called Aura Brush. Okay. And it was a tongue cleaner for bad breath.
Okay.
And Aura Brush became famous and got distribution because of its success on YouTube. Then Poopery reached out to my brother for him to do a campaign for them. And then we all ended up leaving to go do that campaign. And Harmon Brothers was formed at that time. And we didn't really think that we were going to be creating an ad agency at the time. It was just more like, oh, we're doing this cool project. But one thing kind of led to another. And once Squatty Potty hit and then, you know, Purple and stuff, it was like kind of full steam ahead. And now, you know, it's you know, billions of views, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue that's been driven. And that is kind of how I learned the art of filmmaking and storytelling and character creation was through advertising. Mm-hmm. And then now I've been taking those skills and applying them as we are creating Tuttle Twins.
That's so fun. It's so fun. I feel like you should be a homeschool success story. Like, your mother is probably like, my boys, they did all these amazing mm-hmm. things, and now they're all working together, and now they're successful as they're working together, right? So it's kind of a fun homeschool story of, like, you're running wild and doing your business out in nature, and now here you are.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say it is to some degree. And it would be really interesting to know how much of this would or would not have happened mm-hmm. had we just gone all the way up through the sort of normal public school system at the time. And my guess is probably very little of it would have transpired had we not had the background that we did with the education that we got. And so we're very much grateful to, you know, my mom for that, to my uncle for that private school that he ran. And tremendous impact on our lives for certain. And I think really, like I said, taught us to love learning and problem solving. And so much of that is what we use day to day in our jobs now.
I think it's interesting too. So how many of your brothers do you work with?
A lot of them.
How many brothers do you have?
So there's six of us brothers.
All right.
And Tuttle Twins, our distributor is Angel Studios. Angel Studios mm-hmm. is known for The Chosen. And I have three brothers that are working there at Angel Studios.
Okay.
And then I have a brother that works with me at Harmon Brothers. And so that's five of us. Then I only have one other brother that isn't working
directly.
Yeah, working with most of my brothers. Well, not so much the outcast. So at the time that we co-founded Harmer Brothers, we also co-founded VidAngel.
Okay.
And the thought process there was that businesses usually don't succeed, they fail. And so we had two businesses going at once. And we figured one of them had to fail. And then Harmer Brothers and VidAngel took off at the same time.
Mm.
And some of my brothers focused on VidAngel, and I focused on and Harmer Brothers along with one of our other co-founders, Benton, who's a cousin. Mm-hmm. But
of course.
Yeah, of course. And VidAngel ended up having the run-in with Disney and the whole lawsuit thing. Out of VidAngel came Angel Studios, right? Okay. So I'm technically also a co-founder of Angel Studios. And those became two separate companies. Mm-hmm. And so now my other brother is actually working at VidAngel, which is a separate company from Angel Studios. VidAngel is the filtering company for Netflix and Amazon and those services, HBO and whatnot. And then Angel is creating original content to amplify light with The Chosen, Petal Twins, Wing Feather Saga, and those types of
things. So this is going to be a tangent, but I just think I know so many homeschool moms are like, my kids fight like crazy. They're going to kill each other. This is like, they're going to whatever they think their worst case scenario is. So just to give some parents some reassurance, did you and your brothers fight a lot as kids?
Yeah, we did. We for sure had fights and to blows as well. Not usually blows to the face, but like we'd hit each other and bop each other and that kind of stuff. And I for sure remember times when I hated my brothers, like genuinely was like, oh, like they are like not on my side, not my friend. And they were like, I had an older brother that was either too cool for me for a while, or I felt like picked on me too much. And the same thing I had even with my younger brother for a time, and I'm sure he had the same with me. And eventually we just kind of, I guess, grew out of it to some degree, and you end up maturing and hopefully learning learn forgiveness.
Yeah, I think it makes for great stories too.
Yeah, for sure. There's lots of them. I mean, we had real fights, but we also had lots of fake fights. We got inspired by the movie Seven Brides for Seven Brothers
back
in the day, which is probably
a bunch of girls.
Which is definitely not a politically correct video or movie at all now, but at the time, it sure seemed like fun. All the dancing and punching and stuff. And so we would, we would have these moments where we would set things up just right, where my older brother would act like he was going to punch me. And we did it kind of like Hollywood stunt people do, where if you were watching from the right angle, you would think it was that. And then as he'd swing his fist, he would hit his chest.
Right.
So he'd go like that. And so it'd feel like he was actually hitting me. And we would like do that in front of like our friends or cousins, and they'd be like, oh my gosh, did you really just punch him? And anyway, it was a fun thing for us to
do. So there's some hope for parents who are in the thick of it right now, whose kids are fighting. Look at these brothers now taking on the world. So that's awesome. Thank you for letting me go on that tangent.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Petal Twins in just a minute, but just so people will maybe bug Daniel about this, because I know I want it for myself, but he does have a marketing course on his website, Harmer Brothers, right?
It's Harmer Brothers University, harmerbrothersuniversity.com. Mm-hmm.
And so you're obviously a teen could take this class, I'm assuming, this university class, or is it a little intense?
For sure. I would definitely call it intense, but no, I think a teen that's into filmmaking or advertising of some kind, I think can definitely derive a lot of value from it.
All right. So I think if enough of us harass Daniel, he'll eventually create a full homeschool version, homeschool university. Just throwing that out there in all your free time. Maybe think about that.
Yeah. No, it's a fun idea. Just definitely not my highest priority right now.
Probably not. I get that.
No offense to your listeners.
Okay. So let's talk about how you got involved, because you were doing ads. So how in the world did you get involved with Petal Twins to now create a show? Because I would imagine that's quite different.
It is very different. The same and different at the same time. So I've known Connor Boyack, the author of the Petal Twins series, for years. Mm-hmm. We worked on a little documentary film project before. And I think even a couple of things, he's always kind of respected our work at Harmon Brothers all the way along, loved the ads, loved the marketing campaigns that we had done. And I had respected him, had purchased his books, had read them since the very first book came out. I got it immediately, The Law, and I read it with my kids, really enjoyed it. It was like, man, this would have been really cool as a kid to have something like this. And I was really grateful to have it for my kids as I was homeschooling. And then we bought every book since. And then once he had started to get into, I think the numbers of like over 100,000 books sold, he started to contemplate the idea of turning the book series into a TV series. And then my team and I ended up approaching him and said, well, why don't we do this? why don't we make it into a TV series for you? Because I'd been doing advertising for long enough and had enough passion for growing companies and things like that. But I had always kind of wanted to tell my own stories. And I always thought that would be a feature film of some kind. Funny enough, in college, before I majored in advertising, I was majoring in animation.
Oh, okay.
I was pre-animation, so I didn't quite get into the major, but I was studying animation to go towards that. And then I ended up, you know, changing paths to advertising when I didn't get in. I went to BYU, and their advertising program is very competitive, and their animation program is even more competitive.
Okay.
And I didn't end up getting in, ended up going into advertising. It was a really good career for me. But then as I approached the show, you know, I'm coming full circle back to this animation thing. And what happened was I didn't imagine myself doing Tuttle Twins because, I thought I was going to be doing a feature film, and I didn't think I was going to be doing a political cartoon as my first content that I was making for myself and not just for a client. And then I kind of got in my head a vision for what this series could be like, specifically that it could be really educational. It could be really fun and adventurous and have a lot of comedy in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it could be something that kids would choose to watch as entertainment over their options on, you know, YouTube, Disney Plus, Netflix, and the like. But then they would be getting this really good, you know, these really good educational principles along with it. And so once I kind of had that in my head, I had this moment where I finally said to myself, I was like, if I don't do this, who will?
Right.
And the answer was, I don't think anyone will. Mm-hmm. I don't think this will happen. Not in the way that I feel like this can happen. And so then I got really passionate about it. I got really excited about, okay, I need to do this thing. And so my team and I approached Connor. Again, there was a lot of mutual respect for each other's work. And I sort of laid out a vision for the Tuttle Twins brand that was more like a Marvel brand.
Right.
And what I mean by that is Marvel has their cinematic universe, all the movies we know them for. Then they have their TV shows, and they have their video games, and they have their toys, and they have their comic books. And they all have these different stories and variations and different nuances, the characters and things like that. But it's all the Marvel brand, right?
Right.
And I started kind of painting the picture for Connor of like, I think Tuttle Twins can be like a Marvel brand where you have, you know, the original educational books that you've got here, and then you've got the TV series, and then there's all this stuff that can branch out of it. And he really, I mean, he was a fan of Marvel and could kind of picture that in his mind of what this could grow into. And so he got comfortable with the idea and excited about it. And we partnered together. And and then we went and made the first episode into an animatic form, meaning we did all the writing, we did some temporary voice records, and we did some, we made a bunch of storyboards and edited them together to what something that's called an animatic. And that's what animators will follow to do their animation. So it's the storyboards kind of have some movement and stuff to them, but it's very, you know, it's very rough. It's just black and white drawings and that kind of thing. And we put that together for the first episode and went for crowdfunding.
And, yes, I was hoping you would explain a little bit more about what is crowdfunding and why bother with crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. Why not just go the traditional route that other TV shows do?
Yeah, so essentially, to answer most of that question, So our distribution partner is Angel Studios. Mm-hmm. They had raised over $10 million in crowdfunding to do the first season of The Chosen, which was an all-time record for a media project, right?
Yes.
Still is to this day. So the reason to go for crowdfunding was because if you say, hey, let's make a show, let's make a cartoon for kids that teaches about economics and freedom. that pitch is just not going to go very far in Hollywood. Right. You're not going to have Amazon and Netflix and Disney and Warner Brothers or any of these companies are not going to be snatching that up. It's not where their focus is. It's not where their mind is. It's not where their culture is. It's none of those things. Right.
Right.
And so, but what we said to ourselves is this book series is selling hundreds of thousands of copies at this point. Like there is an audience for this and a fairly big one. Mm-hmm. And we feel like that can get bigger if we do this right. And crowdfunding, you know, people know crowdfunding mostly from things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. In those cases, you're just throwing money at a company, okay, and then you're getting some sort of a perk with it, right? Like you're maybe getting the product itself that they're developing, or you're getting access to special content they're creating or whatever it is. And we had some of those elements to it, but with the angel crowdfunding, you actually become an investor, mm-hmm, in the company itself. So we had over 8,000 people that invested in Tuttle Twins when we went live with our crowdfunding for season one. And we raised over, it was like $3.7 million.
That's awesome.
And we became the number one crowdfunded kid show in history at the time. Mm-hmm. That record was broken a few months later, but still at the time we were the number one crowdfunded kid show in history. And we very much did prove out that there was a market for this content and that people were extremely passionate about it, very worried about what the future looked like for their kids, wanted to do something about it. And I think that is the most empowering place to come from as well, is just parents who are like, you know what, am I going to sit around and wait for the government to solve problems?
Right.
Or am I just going to dive in, especially when it comes to my kids, or am I just going to dive in and do it myself? So we're finding more and more parents that just want to do that, right? That are just like, I'm just going to educate them on the side here in these areas where I feel like it's, you know, it's not, or it's deficient over here in their public schooling or whatever they're getting. And so, yeah, the crowdfunding campaign was awesome. The support was amazing. And so many people were just saying as they were investing, they're like, I don't even care if I even ever make money on this. I just need this to exist, you know?
Right.
So that was really cool to see.
That's really fun. And you've had a lot of people and sponsors and whatnot, or not even sponsors is the right word, but when you would do YouTube lives, I saw JP Sears was on one. So people who are really well known are really wanting this and helping promote this into families' homes.
Yeah, JP's great. He came on and partnered up on an episode. He's actually the voice in the voice of one of the characters in our episode that talks about disagreeing with someone does not make them your enemy.
So is that the flat earthers? Is it that one?
Yes, the flat earthers. Yes. Uh-huh. And as well as Zuby of Twitter fame came on and helped us out on the promotion of, I think it was the inflation episode that we did. And then we've had the Babylon Bee that's also gotten involved. And Kyle over there was very gracious and a big fan of the show. I mean, he even said Grandma, our character Grandma, he said the greatest cartoon character ever created or something along those lines. I was like, well, that's a high praise, but probably not true. But still, that's great. Yes.
But that brings me to the next question, because if you've read the originals, it's Ethan and Emily Tuttle, right? Mm-hmm. And they're a lot more prim and proper. It's a lot more serious, but still good. Like my kids read them. Mm-hmm. I have owned all the books for years and the cartoon is silly. So like, obviously my 5-year-old loves Derek, the raccoon who eats everything. And then you have Grandma who she knows everybody through history and always has a long story. Like, so how did you come up with Grandma and the raccoon and these different types of characters than what the main book was based on?
So we got I was able to put together a really good collection of writers that I had had experience with in the past in creating ads at Harman Brothers. And I told them a couple of things that I wanted. And when Johnny, one of our writers and directors, when we met together originally, he was kind of passionate about this idea of it having sort of a magical or fantastical element to it. And I was totally down for that, because some of my early inspiration for the show was drawn from things like the Magic School Bus and Phineas and Ferb and The Simpsons and some of these other things that, you know, have some fun, some silliness, some sci-fi or adventure or fantasy or whatever you want to call it. And so he, our writer Johnny, came up with the idea for having Grandma this with a time traveling wheelchair,
right?
And when, as writers, as we came together, we all had sort of a fantastical element that could have been a theme throughout the show, but we wanted a fun way to do the storytelling. And it's what, again, the my vision from the start was this show has to be something that kids choose to watch.
Yes.
And then they'll just be entertained, but then they're really getting really good lessons behind it. Cause like for my childhood, I remember things like DuckTales and Darkwing Duck and some of those cartoons, but I don't remember much in the way of lessons from them, you know? Mm-hmm. And then my kids grew up with like Magic School Bus. And I remember seeing some of the lessons that came through there, and like VeggieTales. And that was another inspiration. And so anyway, it felt like there was an opportunity for more entertainment. So the books are really great. They're really educational, and parents really love how much it treats kids like adults. But like you said, there's a little bit of a serious tone to them. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was an opportunity to have this kind of higher level of education than what you normally see in the TV show itself, but then also still have some of that familiar sort of just easy popcorn kind of viewing fun with it. So I in the writer's room, I was saying I think we need like some sort of a sidekick animal that can be really fun. And so
like, who thought of raccoon? Like, you know what I mean? like you're in this meeting, you're in the discussion, to like, I think this raccoon who eats everything.
Yeah, we threw around a lot of possibilities of animals, but a raccoon is particularly like smart and wild at the same time, and we liked that element of it, and the idea of having just a regular old name for it, Derek, was kind of fun.
Fantastic.
And then I from drawing inspiration from places like The Simpsons and Gravity Falls, I also wanted a character that was just kind of dumb. So there's Copernicus, and
there
we thought
Copernicus.
That was, there was, we thought it would be fun to have like a philosopher or a famous historical, like what you would think of as more of a smart figure to be the dumb. So that's where the name Copernicus kind of came in. And he's just kind of is saying silly things all the time. Yes. And is also tremendously physically resilient when bad things happen to him, which is resilient in every way, actually. Yes. And then
oblivious.
Yes. And then Grandma, I loved the idea of something unexpected, like a disabled person with a wheelchair being like one of the primary figures, and having it transform into this time machine and do all this stuff that it does, and her being this socialite. It was just this really fun sort of way to connect the twins back to these historical figures and teach them about it. And then as we got further into it, Grandma's backstory is that she immigrated from Cuba as a young girl. And that's very much integrated in the story. You'll see that in season one. And so all these elements kind of started coming together, and I have a brother who, his wife is originally from Brazil.
Okay.
And so, having, a little bit of a mixed race, marriage and stuff with, the Tuttle Twins' parents and stuff, that Cuban backstory, so much of it felt like it was really good to teach about principles of freedom and the dangers of things like communism. So that's kind of where we were approaching this from.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's so fun. It's so interesting. So to be honest, I have never, ever promoted watching a show with homeschool ever. I don't like TV. like my husband and I, that's one of the things we disagree about, right? Like, so we own a TV, but we have no cable now. We've gotten rid of all these things. And there was a time when I had kid number six. And so we did do Magic School Bus and some things like that for survival mode. But I love the Tuttle Twins. And it is funny because I have to be honest, I've never watched The Chosen. And I feel embarrassed because everybody's like, I can't believe you've never seen The Chosen. And you're this Christian and you love all these things. And I'm like, I know, but like, I don't know. Like, I love Jesus and we read our scriptures, so I feel good. It's so interesting that it's become such a fun thing. So on Thursdays, part of our school is history. And I love tying economics, backpacking it, right? Mm-hmm. So we're doing the Russian Revolution right now, and then we'll go watch a Tuttle Twins episode. And so it was fantastic because it might have been episode 10 or 11 where the little girl had Karl Marx up in her house. And my kids were like, oh, we know who that is because we've been studying Lenin, who was a huge fan of Karl Marx, right? And so it's so fun to have them have things to make sense of what we're learning about.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. I feel like I said, when you film and TV, and I'm right there with you in that, like, I hate how much influence it has over our lives. Yeah. I hate how much time we spend on it. At the same time, as I'm very much a lover of it. I love, you know, watching a good TV show. I love watching a good film. And obviously I love creating it, but how much better is it when it's used for good? And that's kind of where, that's what's kind of what I was wanting to do, is like anything that I was going to go create, I wanted it to be something that was hopefully going to make the world a better place, that it was hopefully going to instill good values. And luckily, you know, Connor and Elijah have done such a good job of creating this book series that already has all these things. So rights to life, liberty, property, you know, free trade, the golden rule, entrepreneurship, the dangers of inflation, protectionism, you know, disagree doesn't mean enemy, all these types of things. He's involved so integrally in helping with this. And what's really been fun to see with it, and is that even I have a lot of liberal friends, right? I'm in the creative community very much so, and I don't consider myself a liberal. I don't really consider myself much of anything, to be honest, other than a freedom-minded individual. Yeah. But I've seen that when my liberal friends have watched the series, in the way that we're treating it and going through and helping you think critically about it, they're like, I agree with like 80-90% of this, you know, right? Even though they're like, oh, this is just some, you know, conservative or libertarian cartoon or something like that. And that's kind of what is in their mind to begin with. But then when they watch it, they're like, oh, like most of this stuff is stuff I agree with. And I've kind of always believed that about sort of the freedom principle, is that people innately want to be free, right? That is something, no matter if you're pushing it for the left or the right, what people have problems with isn't their own freedoms. They have problems with other people's freedoms. Yeah. They don't want other people to have all the same. That's right. Freedom for me and not thee, right?
Yeah.
And but when you approach the arguments from some of those logical standpoints and even moral standpoints, I think there's a really clear case to be made for the betterment of humanity within the principles of freedom, and for the prosperity and peace of cultures and peoples and countries through these principles of freedom. And so it's something I'm really, really passionate about. And it's really good to see people responding the way they have. I mean, I think our IMDb score right now is like an 8.5 or something, which is really high.
Yes.
And that's an 8.5, even when we've got communists that jump on there and just give us one star without even watching it, you know? which definitely happens. We're seeing a similar kind of thing where we get like 95% thumbs up on our YouTube videos, and it's, we've seen these videos like clips on inflation that have gone viral, like where they've gotten millions of views on TikTok and on Instagram and stuff. And so people I think are ready for this message, even as much as like maybe the society as a whole isn't like trending this direction. I think there's enough strong families and individuals that are craving this and are wanting it and to integrate it into their education.
What I think is neat about it is the inspire piece, right? So a lot of homeschoolers, if you study Charlotte Mason, she calls it scaffolding, right? Like build a scaffolding to create something amazing. Those who study well-educated heart, it's all about inspiring and all these things. And so when it was just the original books, so my son, who's now 19, he went and read Creature from Jekyll Island, the original book, right? And we read The Law.
Yep.
And he got into, I don't know if you know who Bob Murphy is, but he went and did his economics course. He's done a lot with Tom Woods, right? So it like totally opened his eyes. He's on a mission right now, but he loves economics. He already has his mortgage license. Like he loves it. It was totally inspired. But this last one, so we just rewatched the inflation monster. I don't remember the name of that episode, the inflation monster. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the inflation monster.
Okay. But it has Milton Friedman in there, right?
Yep.
An economist. Yep. And that's what my daughter had been reading is one of Milton Friedman's books. And so it's such a great springboard to get kids to inspire them in such an easy, easy way. Instead of shoving lessons and dates and facts and the Great Depression, you had one with Calvin Coolidge and you had all these other ones that like, it was so easy that my kids are like, oh, I want to know more. Why is like Zimbabwe printed money? Was that a problem? Right. Like that was such a great part of that show.
Yeah. And Connor and Elijah have now put together this American history book.
Yes.
Of course, Tuttle Twins. Yeah. Right. And so they, obviously, the focus of that book is very much kind of like what my uncle's curriculum mm-hmm. was like in that private school that I ended up graduating from in high school, was really based on not the names, dates, and places and those facts as much as it's like, what do we learn from this history? Like, what does this mean to me? And what I like about what he set up with the books themselves, and then also what we're doing with the show, is that Ethan and Emily get a chance to experience something in their real life, kind of have questions about it. How does this work out? Then go learn a principle and then go see how that applies in another setting.
Yeah.
And then go come back home and reapply it themselves, you know, to their situation and see how that improves things. And that's, I think, I hopefully kids are learning application. We're seeing a lot of comments come through of kids that are getting inspired to go start their own little businesses after they watch the entrepreneurship episodes.
Also the magazine, right? And it always highlights a little kid with something that they've created.
Yep. And then a lot of kids that are understanding inflation and pointing it out while they're going through Walmart or Costco or whatever it is. Uh-huh. And a lot of kids that are recognizing in their interactions with their cousins or siblings, the golden rule in play, and then remembering it from the episode and applying that. I remember one little kid talking about how his cousins were over, the cousins were over to play. They weren't playing very nice. They're playing pretty rough. And the little boy says, it's like, you're not playing very nice. He's like, you need to watch the Tuttle Twins and the Worms. Is what he said. And it's just cool to hear those kinds of things, that it's making a real difference and it's sticking with these kids. And I mean, that's what we intended from the beginning. At the end of the day, it has to change hearts and minds for the better.
Right. So for those of you who may be even more intense than me with no screens, there is another option to get the Tuttle Twins, right, without having to watch it. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, if you want to watch it, it is all free and it's on the Angel app. You can go to the App Store and download the Angel app for free. It's on Google Play as well. Everything's available for free there. So you can watch it episodes 1 through 11 as of the time of this recording. And then we also have a graphic novel or comic book that goes with each one of the episodes. And so it has that entire story there, as all that lesson, all that material is there in a fun, colorful book that your kids can flip through and read and enjoy over and over again and not have to do it in front of a screen. And like we see the kids that go through, and as they're reading, they'll actually imitate the characters and the way they do the voice performances. You know, like when Copernicus is having a moment with his lemonade, they're like, you know, kind of thing. Like they do all that kind of stuff as they're reading the graphic novels, and it's really fun to watch them experience it that way. But yeah, I think you have a link for them, right?
Yes, I do. I'm going to put a link in my show notes, and I will also put it out in my email so you can grab the graphic novels, and it's at a discount. I feel like Tuttle Twins are always trying to basically give their stuff away. Like, more people need to know about freedom.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, sure. My last question for you is, what is your favorite episode?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know, like some of it, just because of the newness, the freshness of creating and how fun that was. The first episode has a place near and dear in my heart. Mm-hmm. And I directed that one, but I don't know if I could definitively say that I have a favorite episode, because there's so many things that I like about so many of them. It might even, I think time will tell on that one, but for right now, just because of the crowdfunding and all the success that came with that and stuff, I think episode one still is probably my favorite in some way. But I think there's funnier episodes that we have. I think there's other ones with more adventure. I think there's other lessons that parents will think resonate more for them right now throughout the season. But again, we've got a total of 12 episodes that will finish out season one. So we're excited about that.
That's awesome. So do you have a favorite character? If you don't have a favorite episode, do you have a favorite character?
Yeah. I mean, it's usually been Derek. I love the slapstick humor, but when it comes to the dialogue, for sure, it's Grandma. Like Grandma's just so fun because she dances to the beat of her own drum. I cared for a time, my family cared for a great grandma of mine that lived in our house. Mm-hmm. And so I got to see firsthand what it's like in those latter years, like some of the crazy off the wall things that people say when they're older and they just don't care. The filter kind of comes off, and that's kind of refreshing. And that's kind of how grandma is. And it's really fun to see how smart she is and how witty and clever and like kind of, at times even a little bit irreverent with the kids, but I wouldn't say it, at least not in a way that crosses the line for me. And
I still feel very G-rated.
I would think that's very safe to say that it's G-rated, unless, I mean, there is episode one, we do have a gunfight. It's not a vicious one, but I think YouTube probably would not like it as on YouTube Kids. I think there's some policies against that, but yeah, I mean, eventually maybe we'll even do an episode about the Second Amendment. See,
that's awesome. Get a militia going.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. And just honestly, thank you so much for following your passion and creating something that you can share with so many people and teach them in such an easy way, more people to learn about freedom and economics and all those wonderful things.
Well, thank you for having me on, Meg. Really appreciate it. All right.
Have a great one.
Thanks.
Are you ready to take the concepts learned on this podcast to the next level? Then I invite you to join Mama's Members, a place where I will help you succeed in your family and homeschool beyond what you thought was possible. You will have access to hours of content, a place to ask questions, and weekly coaching calls to help you be the amazing homeschool mom you are called to be. To sign up, go to www.coachmegthomas.com/join. I can't wait to see you there.